Storyline with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line. Coming to you guys from the DraftKings Network. We say what's up to our audience watching on Samsung TV. Plus, Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino. Mike Pritchard, our VSiN NFL analyst, played nearly a decade in the National Football League, former first-round pick and a national champion with the Colorado Buffaloes in the early 90s. Fun first hour. We thank Randy Mueller, NFL general manager, former NFL general manager and former executive of the year, for joining us in hour number one. In hour number two, 30 minutes from right now, Barrett Salee, college football writer with CBS Sports, will be joining us as we discuss the college football slate, including the Red River rivalry at the Cotton Bowl tomorrow between Oklahoma and Texas. But let's kick off hour number two with Sunday Night Football. A rivalry renewed, a one-sided rivalry as of recent. Dallas Cowboys taking on the San Francisco 49ers. The Niners, 3.5-point favorites, total sitting at 45. This is pretty much the same market that we saw in the playoff game this past January. But how do you guys kind of break this one down? Biggest game of the year to this date.
I like your thoughts first, Femi, because you're the one that watches more Cowboys than anybody.
Unfortunately.
Focuses on their schedule, their path. No, really. I'd like to hear your thoughts first.
So I do have a bet in this game. I took the four when it was available. I took plus four with Dallas. And I think that this is just one of those situations to where you're getting a formidable opponent in the Cowboys to where everyone is saying, yeah, but. And for good reason. The Cowboys haven't produced in these big moments for a number of years now because it's, yeah, but the Cowboys have issues defending the run. Yeah, but Dak Prescott's a turnover machine. Yeah, but Mike McCarthy will do something to screw it up in the end. This is still a pretty good football team. And when you take a look at their roster, they're toe-to-toe with the likes of the Eagles, the Niners, and those types of teams from a roster standpoint. And on the flip side of this, I think this is pretty much the peak for the Niners in terms of a market rating. Like they can win the Super Bowl for sure because they have talent on both sides of the ball and they have a really good coach in Kyle Shanahan. But the Niners, I mean, everyone talks about Brock Purdy now. Is he a top five quarterback in the NFL? McCaffrey's the offensive player of the year. Shanahan might be the coach of the year. Like, it feels like you're buying high on San Francisco if you were to lay it. To where on the other side, I feel like this is a field goal game. Either way, Dallas, once again, healthy for the first time on that offensive line, going back a couple of years. I think the Cowboys keep this thing close.
A few thoughts. It's interesting when evaluating Purdy, because if you take him up against all these other great quarterbacks, Elway and Marie, in their first, however, what is it, 12 starts or whatever, his numbers beat them in every single category.
I was going to say, it's probably better.
But they were all drafted high to bad teams, right? He was drafted at the end of the draft and walked into a top four or five team in the NFL that's developed on both sides of the ball with a running game, right? So that. I don't buy the criticism of McCarthy to Dallas. I don't think he's done a poor job calling plays at all. Not at all. I think it might even be an upgrade on Kellen Moore. Here's my thing with Dallas, and it's been my thing with Dallas for the better part of half a decade now. They're very good from the lead, but when they get behind, they really struggle, and I think Dak presses. When he doesn't have to press and they can take their time and they bleed the clock with the running game and short pad, they're really good. But when they get two scores behind, there's not a lot of teams that they're going to come back on and win, even in Arizona Cardinals. Yeah. And the other concern is that their weakness on defense stopping the run is this 49ers strength on offense and the creative running game of Shanahan. People ask me, is this game going to get to three? I don't think it can get to three. I know there's a lot of Dallas money always because they are still really America's team. But I don't believe this game can get to three, especially not here with us. So,
right.
I'm going to take the approach of who gets the lead. You know, if Dallas can get through the first quarter tied or ahead and I can still get 3 points with them, I will. If they get behind, then I'm probably going to pass the game. That's the way I look at it.
Femi, you got the game at where when you took the point?
I took four.
Yeah, I mean, it's too late for that, obviously. Yeah.
But I still even like 3.5 as
it
well.
It could get back to four. The juice is still on the 3.5.
If it gets back to four, then I'd be inclined. Yeah. Because, I mean, I think this is more of a divisional game, familiarity all over the place, right, with the teams, with the roster. You know, in the comparisons of Brock Purdy or trying to understand it, you really can't. I think, look at it this way. If Brock Purdy was on a number of other teams, would he be the starting quarterback?
I mean, he's playing like he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Well, on that team, gotten that chance.
On that team, Jimmy Garoppolo was great on that team too, right?
I mean, that's a fair point.
But the thing is this is the best team in football. And I guess is are they going to slip up? Or are they going to play down? Are they not going to have their best game against the Cowboys? I mean, Christian McCaffrey is on MVP level, like running back. I think they're loaded. They're going to be healthy for this game, too. And so, you know, for Dallas, they're not completely healthy. They are still trying to figure out things offensively, even though McCarthy has done a great job. And I'm like Mike Palm was talking about, you know, stopping a run is going to be so pivotal in this game. And Kyle's going to stick with the run. He's going to want to beat you up with the run. Dallas is going to have to be ready for that. Anything short, like if it's three, then, you know, I'm leaning towards the 49ers. But if it gets back up to four, then as from a divisional standpoint, then, yeah, taking the points and things you can do with taking the points. So like teasers or whatever, right? If you're inclined to do that, that seems more attractive. This is going to be one of those familiarity games. And certainly the playmakers are going to have to step up.
I do think that Dallas's run defense obviously is the weakness of their defense, and it's tough when they have to play from behind, like Mike Palm was mentioning here. Mm-hmm. But I also think that the Cowboys coaching staff, especially on the defensive side of the ball, is really good. Dan mm-hmm. Quinn is a terrific defensive mm-hmm. coordinator and probably should be a head coach. I'm glad he's not. He can stay as a DC forever. I wish he do. But last year in the playoffs, the Niners didn't just run all over Dallas. And Dallas's run defense was a weakness last year, probably even more of a weakness last year with all the injuries that they had at linebacker. Like the Niners ran for about 3.5 yards per clip on this Dallas front. So I think if Dallas, your point is well taken, that if Dallas is able to get ahead, then it definitely puts a lot of pressure on Brock Purdy and puts mm-hmm. him in an uncomfortable spot. I mean, has Brock Purdy even taken a snap trailing in the second half in his career yet? Like, I don't think he has, to be honest. Like, I think he's been able to play from in front, and he's been very comfortable. If Dallas can make him uncomfortable and unleash that pass rush, maybe we see a little bit of a different Brock Purdy. So to me, it was a number play and also trying to sell high on this Niners team that everyone believes, and I believe it as well, is the best team in the NFC. So they're going up against a formidable opponent in the Cowboys. So I took the four. I still like it at 3.5. I think anything north of a field goal, I think, is a play on Dallas or past the game.
Who in the AFC is better than them? I would say they're the best team in football so far. Would you agree with that?
I would
Fridge?
Agree. Yeah.
You can maybe make an argument for Buffalo, maybe, but that Jets game is still fresh. The turning the ball over, but maybe as we get further away from that game, maybe Buffalo's the argument that we'd make. Kansas City, their defense looked a little suspect against Zach Wilson, I think, for the first time, but so far the majority of the season, I think Kansas City's defense has been pretty good.
What if Dallas can't run the ball in this game, though?
Then it's problematic.
Yeah.
It gets real problematic because then you're asking Dak to now have to drop back. And I don't know if we want to be seeing Dak throw the ball 40 times in this game.
Well, not only that, just you bring in Bosa, you bring in so many other things. That plays into the strength of San Francisco as well.
I think Dallas has to throw the ball on first down here.
Yeah.
I don't think you can line up and run Pollard into the line on first down. I think as a changeup like they did with Herbert last night, how the Bears sort of handled that game, then they can open things up. Yep. But I don't think they can line up and try to, you know, put him between the tackles 20 times. That's not happening.
That's not. I mean, once again, we'll see Dallas's offensive line healthy. Mm-hmm. Knock on wood. I mean, we thought that was going to be the case week one, and all of a sudden that fell apart. So the five projected starters who we've yet to see play together in a couple of years, they will be playing on Sunday night. That is Cowboys, Niners. Cannot wait for that one, Sunday Night Football. Another game in the afternoon slate that is, I think, really interesting from a betting standpoint, just because of the movement in the market, is Kansas City and Minnesota. Mm. This opened 6. I think there was even a 6.5 as a soft opener on Sunday afternoon. Now we're down to 3.5, and who knows, we might get to 3 by kickoff right now when you look at the juice. The total sitting at 53. Are you guys buying this move here on Minnesota against the defending world champs?
I thought the 6.5 was too high. I thought this game should have been around 4.5. Because look, Cousins tried to give that game away last week too, but Carolyn Young wanted to give it away more. Right, I mean, it's always a comedy of things that happen. Look, I'm concerned about Mahomes a little bit.
Yeah.
He's making some strange throws to me.
Yeah.
Now, he always tried to do some acrobatic things. He's not doing acrobatic things. He's making bad throws. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure he's trying to force the ball to Kelce because there's, you know, 70 million little teenage girls watching the game now. I'm not even sure they're dating, to be honest with you. I think the NFL is the greatest marketing agency in the world.
They are.
And they're always looking for new audiences, whether it's in Germany or it's in young girls. So, I don't know. They're just not clicking, right?
No,
I needed a money line parlay to cash with the Chiefs on Sunday night. And, you know, I was kept looking at, I'm going to hedge off this. I thought they were going to lose this game to Zach Wilson because when he'd get the ball, he couldn't move the ball for a large stretch of that game until finally they got tied. And then the Jets only had three first downs after that. But I'm not playing this game, even though it's Kirk Cousins and, you know, what's he going to do? But I pass.
Yeah. You know, looking at it from different standpoints, you know, unit on unit, you know, the defense for Minnesota, this could be a get right situation for Kansas City and that offense, you know, for them to click. And then offensive line against, you know, Chris Jones and what everybody else for Kansas City. That's not a great matchup either. They can't run the ball that well or the way that they need to. It's tough. I mean, Kansas City, they haven't played their best football. They're searching for it, though. And with that quarterback searching for their best game, that gets dangerous if you're trying to pick the other side of that.
Meanwhile, their sole loss is Kadarius Toney handing the game to a very good Detroit team, right? Mm-hmm. So when you think about that, they've still gotten by
And what impresses me about that game is their defense only held Detroit to 14 points.
Right.
Like it was the pick six was the 21 points there, and that's how the Lions were able to get that win. I don't think it's ever Minnesota for me at this one. I think it's a pass, honestly, for the game. Yeah. Sitting at 3.5, I think we pass the game and we see what happens. For totals betters, I mean, 52.5, I think we'll see points maybe, especially if Kirk Cousins has to play from behind. That's usually when he likes to go ahead and pad the box score up a little bit. So maybe we get a lot of points in the second half of this game. But I think a fun game nonetheless, an interesting one from a betting market standpoint. A lot of money coming all throughout this week on the Minnesota Vikings. All right, we'll put the NFL off to the side. We'll get back to college football and go from a 10,000-foot view and look at the futures market next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and the VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get all new NBA betting guide featuring up-to-date previews on all 30 teams, futures and year-long player props, best bets on player awards like Rookie of the Year, live betting strategies plus strategy and advice on building your own NBA model from senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel. Give yourself an edge this season and get the VSiN NBA betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at vsin.com/subscribe. How about that? Look at the cover on that, baby. Dame Time is the cover with the Milwaukee Bucks co-favorites. Yeah.
Divorce Time. Divorce Time is what the cover could be.
That's a perspective from the Portland people.
Yeah, and the lady. We got to change this open. But I in eighth grade, I was a wishbone quarterback.
Oh, you were?
I was.
But we had a really out here running the veer.
Well, we had a really good fullback. And it was easier to run the dive with when you had the wishbone behind this, try to line him up and run him. Yep. So
did you guys have the wide splits between the center and the guard?
Yes, we did.
Right, there you go.
I was a quarterback and I was a cornerback.
Okay,
and
so you were John Gruden?
Yeah, I was John Gruden.
I was John Gruden.
If I would have followed that pattern, it was fun. We had fun with it, and we had the kid.
How many passes did you attempt?
I attempted four that year.
Okay,
I attempted.
That's about right.
Yeah, we were tied in a last minute situation.
We got the they had you dropping back everything.
I popped up like Turner Gill and tried.
Okay.
Anyhow, we're going to college football.
Maybe we'll have to do some reconfiguration with the open here. Do a little read option action.
Yep.
The option. It's a dying breed now. We don't see it as much in college football anymore. But let's talk college football because I don't know if you saw on Twitter, our old friend Chris Felica, the Bear, who has his deal over at Fox Sports now. Good seeing him over there on the Big Noon Kickoff. But he tweeted this interesting tweet that I thought was really cool. It said, last year, TCU was unranked entering October. Of course, TCU goes all the way to the national title game. He said, Michigan was 14th in 2021. Which team outside the AP top 10 has the best chance of continuing this streak of reaching the college football playoff after entering October outside the AP top 10? So right now, the teams are as follows. Number 11 is Alabama. They're plus 500 to make the CFP. Oklahoma's at 12. They're 4-1. Washington State big game in Pasadena against UCLA this week. They're 13th at 14-1 to make the CFP. North Carolina is 15-1. Oregon State, we don't have their odds up there, but Ole Miss 22-1, Miami 12-1, Utah 22-1, Tennessee at number 22. They are also 22-1. But when you look at that landscape and you know that there's still a lot of college football to be played, which of those teams outside the top 10 do you think can make a move and potentially crack the top four by year's end?
Well, I think there's more now than ever because we don't have the dominance at the top. To me, Michigan looks like the best team. You know, Notre Dame, this is what a four-game gauntlet. You know, you lose to Ohio State. That was a tough game against Duke. It won't be easy against Louisville. And then you have USC, right?
Yep.
If you can get through this gauntlet, they can get there. But you got to win the next 2 weeks. Alabama holds their future in their hand. They're not as good, but Georgia's not as dominant. Oklahoma has it in front of them, but you got to beat Texas twice. I love this Washington State team, family. I just love it. I love this team. Are they elite? And can they run the table? I mean, you're going to have to be... Who do they get? Who's the rest of their schedule?
And they have to go to Oregon, and they also have to go to Washington as well. That's a tough deal for them.
The best part about the Pac-12 is there are no divisions either. Yeah.
Yep.
So they can really push those two teams or teams that are at the top for their conference championship that's going to be out here in Vegas. That makes it intriguing, too, for Utah. I mean, Utah's got one loss, right? Yeah. I mean, the middle of the pack opens up and is part of this discussion. Like, and it's really for any conference. Like, there's nothing wrong with sprinkling, money on a lot of these teams, to be honest with you.
And so it's interesting. North Carolina undefeated, Miami undefeated, right? Can either of those teams run the table? And obviously it's those three with Florida State. One of them can come out of there undefeated and be in the playoff. I think an undefeated ACC champion is likely in the playoff.
And I think the ACC also went to the Big 12 rule and the Pac-12 rule of like where it's just the top two teams. Yeah. So it's no longer by
coastal
divisions.
Atlantic.
No more coastal and Atlantic. So if Miami were to trip up in Tallahassee, I think they play in November, maybe they get another crack at FSU on a neutral site in the ACC title game.
Interesting. So
I think Miami's really interesting. Miami at 12-1. I mean, we saw them, they beat up A&M. Granted, that was a home
after
game.
The first quarter, I think they scored like 8 out of 9 possessions.
Like Van Dyke is a really good quarterback. Like he looks like he's the guy that everyone was excited about after his freshman year. Like I think they have a really talented roster. Now the coach, Crystal Ball, I don't really trust him, but he can recruit his tail off, and they obviously have a lot of really good players as we've seen so far.
Would you, if you had to make a bet on one team outside of the top 10 to make the playoffs, who would it be?
Only on one team?
Yeah. I'm going to let you bet one.
I mean, Washington State's attractive. They really are. Because of the conference. And like I'm going with that middle of the pack mantra in terms of I think middle of the pack equals what's going on with college football as opposed to the leaders at the top. Or who's the leader at the top? I was asked this question not too long ago about who's the best team in the Pac-12. I'm like, I didn't have an answer. Did not have an answer. But the cloud is there already for the Pac-12. I think Washington State is interesting. They got a big game against Washington, obviously a rivalry game too. And it gets interesting to me. So for my money, it would be Washington State.
Can I interest you guys in Ole Miss and old Lane Kiffin? After the big win last Saturday against LSU. Well, let me read the schedule to you
not
first.
Not interested.
Home against Arkansas. I'm going to read the schedule anyway. Home against Arkansas. They have a bye at Auburn. That's a tough game. Home against Vandy. Home against A&M. That's a very tough game. Then at Georgia would be your chance to
How do they get to the SEC title game with the loss to Alabama? Alabama's still undefeated. Doesn't Alabama have to lose two games?
Alabama would have to lose.
They have to lose twice.
You need help. You need A&M. Bama's only a two-point favorite. Tomorrow
they'd have to lose there and probably to LSU and then they'd have to run the table. That's too much. How about your boy Cam Ward? What are his odds?
14-1.
I mean, if you think
he's talking about for the Heisman
Cam
or
Ward for Heisman.
Oh, Heisman. I think he's in like the 50-1 range.
Think about where Washington State was.
No hope for him.
So let me see the schedule for Washington State, which it's not daunting, but
isn't it better instead of betting them at 14-1 him at 50-1? You know what I'm just saying?
Well, think about where that program was not too long ago, though. I mean, decimated, right? And now they're ranked 13th.
Great job that Jake Dickert, the coach, has done. I know Michigan State's actually been eyeing him to go ahead and replace Mel Tucker. But
who
if you're
would
watching
go to Michigan State, I mean, I don't mind. Yeah. Better not
Urban
say.
Meyer,
I mean,
maybe.
Who would go? No, he dismissed it right away. Yeah. That's the worst place for him to go.
No, I look at where that program was and where they were going, decimated to now being this type of program. I'm not going to overlook that, especially if they can get on some type of run within that strong conference.
So at UCLA tomorrow, they're a 3-point dog right now. On the 21st of October at Oregon, there'll be a sizable dog in that game. The end of the year at Washington, which will be the Apple Cup. But that's, I mean, that can go either way. It's a rivalry game.
They crushed Oregon State. The final score was nothing like the game. I don't understand why they're a 3-point dog at UCLA. You mean to tell me that if this game was on the Palouse, they'd only be a 3-point favorite? I would lay the 3 all the time if I was on if I had UCLA on the road up there. Mm-hmm. UCLA, you know, in 60 minutes against Utah could do nothing. I understand Utah's good, but Utah's offense doesn't control the ball at all.
My only concern with Washington State, because I love the offense, defensively, I don't think they've been tested. Because it's been unsophisticated passing attacks that I think that they faced.
Uga Ungalele, you didn't think would press them?
I mean, Oregon State is not a sophisticated passing attack with DJ.
And no, then there was more sophisticated running game.
Yes,
Jonathan
the run game
Smith
is
a great, he's a really good head coach. And a great run head coach.
Right. He's squeezing the juice out of that orange, though. And then, let's just be honest about it. Wisconsin's not a sophisticated, football's still getting going.
What about that sophisticated pass offense that went into Boulder and lit up the night? About that, they held Colorado State down in the opener.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's a rivalry game. You can't do transitive property when it's a rivalry.
People going after the guy's livers and stuff, and trying to break ribs and stuff. And
here we go, associative, transitive
property,
corollaries, axiom. Here we go.
But I do the point that you bring up. If you're a big Washington State believer, I think 50-1 Cam Ward is interesting. Instead of betting the 14-1 from the
not $20 to win a dime. I mean, at least
if you believe
a little sweat.
I believe in Cam Ward, and he might lead the nation in passing. Who knows? Well, I mean, Caleb has been Penix, and those guys have been doing
Penix,
ridiculous stuff.
See, always strange. I bet that Washington they go down to Tucson and strange,
we said
and then throw for one touchdown. I mean, it's strange. It's always so strange.
We said it on the show last Friday. We were like,
every time they go there,
they go down to that state. They don't know how to act.
Right.
I don't know what happens. Maybe it's too much sun down there in Arizona. It fries their brain. I don't know what's going on.
What is that light? I don't see it up there. Seriously, don't see it up there and watch.
We're just used to the overcast. Now we see the sun. I mean, I'm just happy the Huskies don't have Arizona State on the schedule because that would be a guaranteed loss.
Yeah.
It wouldn't just be close. It would be a loss because they haven't won down in Tempe since 2001, I believe it was. It's dark times when you go down to the Grand Canyon State for the Washington teams. But they got through that one unscathed. I'm excited, though, for Washington, Oregon next week. We'll talk more Heisman and all that stuff next week. But we'll get to Barrett Salee joining us next from CBS Sports to break down more college football here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook, this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palm, Mike Pritchard here hanging out on a football Friday. Three wide, or maybe with the triple option, I think is what we should be calling it now here on a football Friday. But joining us now to talk some college football, it is Barrett Salee, college football writer over at CBS Sports. Barrett, we appreciate you taking the time out of your afternoon. And we were having this conversation in the last segment. I think it's really interesting. Want to get your take on it. Which team outside the top 10 right now in the AP poll do you think has a good chance to make a run at the top 4 and get into the CFP by season's end?
Ooh, outside of the top 4, would it be surprising?
Outside of the top 10.
Outside of the top 10. I meant top 10. knee-jerk reaction to me, and this is going to surprise some folks, is Missouri. Because they've got one of the most effective quarterbacks in the country, and they have really, if they beat LSU, then one big roadblock, and that's Georgia. So That would be one. I know folks will say Oklahoma and Alabama. I don't buy that one bit. Another one that I think probably is maybe the most likely. Why aren't we talking about Miami? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, what, week two, they beat Texas A&M handily, and then a couple of cupcakes in a bye week. It's like, oh, remember that Miami team is actually pretty good. They've got a good offense. They can play defense. So to me, it may just be Miami as one of those teams where, okay, if they can beat Florida State, then, you know, Clemson, wherever in the ACC championship game, they're going to have a pretty good resume, and the path is pretty easy for them. So I think the whole kind of college football world has forgotten about Miami. And to sit here and say they're, what are they right now? I'm looking at 17, I think, 16, 17. That's pretty wild.
Barrett, I'll let Pritch ask you about Red River. I want to talk about down in your neck of the woods between the hedges in Athens. Kentucky, Mark Stoops brings an undefeated Kentucky team to Georgia. They've played Georgia well through the years. The Kentucky defense has held much more explosive Georgia offenses down during this recent era of dominance for Kirby Smart. How concerned were you about Georgia's performance on the plains of Jordan air against an Auburn team that couldn't move the ball at Kyle Field at all? And is 14.5 just too many points to lay in this game?
Yeah, well, 14.5 is definitely too many points. Georgia in FBS opponents, I think, is 0-3-1 against the spread this year. And I think Kentucky's 4-0. So, yeah, I mean, it's the trends are your friend, right? And I think for Georgia, it's a dirty little statistical secret, but people just aren't really paying attention to the fact that it's front seven's actually bad. It's not just like decent, it's bad in every statistical category that matters for a front seven. So that is, you know, that it sort of got, I think, sort of amplified a little bit last week when Auburn absolutely dominated the line of scrimmage. And that's an Auburn offensive line that's horrible. I mean, just horrible. And they still reset the line of scrimmage on Georgia. So, going up against Kentucky, you know, what do we know about Kentucky? Always tough. They might not beat you, but they're going to beat you up. And I think Liam Cohen coming back, their offensive coordinator from 2 years ago, coming back has sort of revitalized that offensive line and recaptured that identity. So, yeah, too many points. I don't care that it's, you know, that it's Athens and it's at night. You know, Kentucky's not going to be shocked by anything this season, especially, you know, it's one thing to have, you know, skilled players that aren't used to that. Kentucky is used to all that stuff, especially on the offensive line. So being able to dominate that defensive front, dominate every defensive front the way Kentucky has, it's going to keep them in this game. There's no doubt.
You know, Barrett, when we are looking at Red River in this matchup, Texas OU, it's incredible. I just want to your thoughts on how do you separate these two teams or how you break this down? Because to me, college football is like when I was playing and everybody was running a wishbone and, okay, who's going to execute, right? It seems like everybody's running the same stuff and, okay, who can execute the best? But I guess in this matchup, just trying to look for anything that I can distinguish to find the winner in this matchup.
Well, I don't buy Dylan Gabriel as a superstar. And I think that's the biggest thing. And I know focusing on quarterback sometimes is lazy analysis, but it's the most important position on the field. And Quinn Ewers has a signature win under his belt on the road and certainly has more physical tools than Dylan Gabriel. To me, I mean, the Oklahoma offense has been awesome this year, but does it, with the exception of Cincinnati, but does it really run through Dylan Gabriel in a way where he can go throw for throw with Quinn Ewers? Because my knee-jerk reaction is no. And I think that's what's going to make or break this game. Yeah, I think it's going to be a track meet. Even though Texas' defense is actually really good, I think, you know, styles make fights and both of these quarterbacks are going to light it up. And, you know, who do you trust more in that situation? To me, it's Quinn Ewers, and it's not even a debate. So, you know, the statistics do say that Dylan Gabriel's a Heisman Trophy candidate. I mean, look at him. He's got video game statistics like every other Oklahoma quarterback in the last decade. But I don't buy him as being a big game quarterback. I just don't see it.
We're speaking with Barrett Salee, college football writer over at CBS Sports. Well, I'm glad you brought up Heisman Trophy candidate because I did want to ask you about the Heisman Trophy. I love this award and I love betting on awards. Projecting forward, like not just right now through the first 6 weeks of the season, but projecting forward by the time we get to conference championship Saturday, who do you think will be the top three Heisman Trophy candidates in your eyes?
Ooh, top three. Okay, let's go Caleb Williams. That's easy. Jordan Travis. who I picked before the season. I think he's what, plus 1600 right now, 1400, mm-hmm. something like that. And Quinn Ewers. I think those three. Because A, what's the Heisman recipe, right? Be a quarterback. Okay. The second one is be in a national title race. I think two of those three will be Jordan Travis and Quinn Ewers. Obviously Caleb gets a little bit of a pass because he's last year's winner. And then value to a team. All three of them are going to be extremely valuable. So I think it's going to be those three going into championship weekend. There might be others out there who, you know, have a case one way or the other. But to me, I think if you're not picking those three right now, I would love to hear a case for somebody else. And really why one of those three shouldn't be in the discussion, because those three guys, I think, are the easy answers. And I can't wait to see what happens with Jordan Travis, because I know he's kind of been forgotten about for a little while, you know, since week one, but that's going to change very quickly.
Barrett, we don't want to get bodacious. No Bo Nix on here, buddy. What's going on?
So I love, but here's the thing with Bo Nix and Michael Penix, right? Nobody on our side of the coast watches them because for whatever reason, Pac-12 puts Washington on Pac-12 Network all the time. I have no idea why, but that's why the conference is crumbling. So to me, the loser of that game, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, they are the loser's out. And I don't think it's fair. I don't like it, but that's just, I think, the way things are going to shake out. And so is the winner of that game going to lead his team to a playoff berth? I think yes, but so will Jordan Travis or Quinn Ewers. And I just think that there will be an element of West Coast bias or East Coast bias, or, you know, Texas bias, so to speak. So I love the Pac-12. I think the Pac-12 is the best conference in the country. I just don't think that it gets enough respect from voters for the Heisman Trophy. And look, I am one of them. I've been perfectly fine voting one of those guys. But as you guys know, there are people with Heisman Trophy votes that don't even work in the sports industry anymore. They just had one and they haven't given it up. And now they work PR for an architecture firm or something. You know, it's just the way things are.
Yeah.
Barrett, we got a little more than a minute left. I know no one's watching Cam Ward, but tell me why Washington State isn't the better team and taking 3.5 isn't the right move in the Rose Bowl on Saturday.
Oh, man. Dante Moore is really good, and he's going to get back at Cam Ward. In a track meet, UCLA has better skill players outside of quarterback, and I think Dante Moore can match, or at least the fit from a physical standpoint, from a skill standpoint, I think Dante Moore is more talented. But, and I think he's got more skill players. I don't know if that's a good answer. And I don't even know if it's the right answer, but that's the best.
It's an answer.
Yeah, it's an answer.
Barrett, we got 30 seconds left. Notre Dame, Louisville, Fighting Irish, 6.5 point favorites, total 54. Do the Fighting Irish continue to go unscathed on the road?
I think they do. I would take the under because Louisville set offense back last week against NC State about for 2-3 decades. So I don't think Notre Dame's going to want to do anything either. So take the under for sure. But I think Notre Dame does get a win.
All right. He is Barrett Salee, college football writer over at CBS Sport. In a month, Barrett, we want you to come back on. We want to get your updated thoughts on the Heisman when we got 1 month left to go here. So we'll have to go ahead and schedule that. Our producer, Elliot, will be texting you about that one. But thanks for coming on. Good luck with everything, man, and be well.
Thank you.
Awesome stuff there from Barrett. How about that? The loser of Oregon, Washington next Saturday, big game, could be out of the Heisman race. High stakes in Seattle.
Yeah, you're pretty much got the board covered when it comes to the Heisman.
Well, I needed LSU's defense to get a stop last week. Okay. Maybe we would have had the board covered with Jaden Daniels. RIP to that ticket. We're already tearing that thing up. We'll wrap up the show going down the NFL games on the other side.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NHL season starts Tuesday night, and our hockey betting experts are ready for all the action. Become a Visa Pro subscriber today and get our all-new NHL betting guide featuring previews for all 32 teams, futures bets, award picks, and season-long props, first period betting strategies, Steve Mackinnon's power ratings, plus best bets articles 5 days a week once the season starts. This guide is a must-have with key insights and data for both avid hockey bettors and those new to the sport. Give yourself an edge this season and get the Visa NHL betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. I think my Seattle Kraken will be in town for banner night going up against the Vegas Golden Knights Tuesday night. So that'll be a fun ticket to go ahead and I'm not going to watch.
Tough ticket because I was it's G2E say, and we're all tied up all week with G2E and then they open. But Derek will be there.
He'll be there?
Did you watch the game at all last night? They were down 3-0 to the Avs and came back at 1-4-3 last night.
I stopped watching when it was 3-1. I was over in the sportsbook.
Did you make any Stanley Cup futures?
I do not have any, no.
I bet the Kings.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Toronto's awful good, but when it's another team, you got to see it to believe it. I mean, it's been since '93 a Canadian team has won. So,
do you ride out the whole NHL season, or do you jump on like?
No, I'll add more. Okay. I'll add more, but not before the halfway point, before the All Star break. I don't do anything after the All Star break. But normally, I made one. Normally, I'll make two or three futures, and then maybe add before the All Star break.
There you go. They're a little for the future
not
strategy.
Not like Femi with the Heisman. I mean, I'm not going to have nine teams, 12 teams.
Or, I mean, if you get nine teams at 101 plus, yeah, I mean, maybe.
Yeah. Cover the board.
You're covering the board. Audacious. They're out there in Times Square. Maybe I'll go out there to New York with a megaphone saying, Bo Nix for the Heisman. Bo Nix. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network here. And before we get out of here, let's go and talk about some NFL games. A game that you guys really wanted to bring up here was the Texans at the Falcons. Interesting market because the look-aheads and the openers had Atlanta 3.5-point favorite. We see the Falcons go overseas in London and do pretty much nothing offensively. And then we also see the Texans dominate the Pittsburgh Steelers last Sunday with a makeshift offensive line. And now we sit here with the Falcons, 1.5-point favorites, total 41.5. Texans might be the surprise team of the NFL this season.
They are to me. I know Derek says the Giants. And our guest, Mr. Mueller, said the Giants were a surprise. Is the most surprising? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I didn't think the Giants would be very good. But I'm shocked about the Texans and how they look as a team. And it's not they've had a couple close finishes here and there. You know, they've been in control of these games. They're winning. They're running the football. Stroud's been impeccable. He's not made mistakes. How good are they? And then on the flip side, Pritch, I know there's calls in Atlanta already to make a quarterback change, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're not playing up to expectations. It seems like Arthur Smith is having a hard time trying to create an identity for this offense or trying to get into some type of rhythm with this offense with Ritter. I think it's a matter of time that we see Heinicke. It has to happen. What worries me about this game from my former team standpoint is that offensively, there's no rhythm. There's nothing, right? And then you got C.J. Stroud, who is really playing this game at an elevated level. Like, nothing's phasing this guy. I don't think he has a pick, right? And so this guy is playing a game the way that a lot of people anticipated him playing, but not until year two, maybe year three, right? And D'Amico is just doing a great job with this roster. Whatever juice he's using in that locker room, it's working because it doesn't matter if they're frontline guys or not. They don't have a ton of frontline guys. It's not a deep roster at all. But like the Giants last year in Dable, he's got something going where these guys are going out there and competing each and every game day. And that turned into a playoff appearance for the Giants. Look at the Giants now, right? Yeah. But I think C.J. Stroud gives, and I said this last week or a couple weeks ago, it gives this organization a chance to get it right now. They got it right at quarterback. Now all they got to do is build it around them, right? So looking forward, I'm eager to bet the Texans moving forward as they develop the roster, as they get better as an organization and team.
For this game, I'm really interested, though, because let's say at halftime, it's Texans are up 13-3, Falcons have two or three first downs. Do you think we see Taylor Heinicke in the second half? Like, from an in-game betting standpoint, how would that change how you view this game if it's Taylor Heinicke at quarterback instead of Desmond Ridder?
Yeah, because I don't know where else you go. What else can you do with your game plan, or what else can you do with your play selection if you're Arthur Smith, who's calling the plays, and your quarterback can't execute it? Well, you got to change the quarterback. And so, well, I think they're averaging, 150 yards passing? you can't do that in the National Football League. And you know, you're in the week five, and I think the next change or the next adjustment, if you will be to change quarterbacks.
Would you like Atlanta better with Heinicke at quarterback?
I would, because he's a gunslinger, but he can also manage it. Like, he's going to give those trees chances to make plays with the football as they throw it. I think that's going to create energy too on that side of the ball.
Atlanta chose not to take a bye coming off London. How big of a factor is that for you? Brent talks about that trip, which he made with the Raiders, that you really got to take your bye after it. They didn't.
Right.
Everything points to Houston here for me.
It does. It totally does. I mean, the way that CJ is playing, nothing phasing the guy, played well on the road. It's a dome environment. It's not going to be a raucous environment for him to have to perform in. As long as they settle down and execute, the pressure is on Atlanta. The pressure is on Ritter. The pressure is on Arthur Smith. And so there's an opportunity out there for the Texans.
There could be some early boo birds there. I know the Falcons fan base, we joke that it's not the most raucous fan base, but if it gets off to a slow start, it wouldn't shock to hear some boos.
Is it Arthur Smith's fault if this team doesn't make the playoffs?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah.
Because he should be able to make it with Ritter.
Right. Why are you riding out with this guy?
But was it his decision, or was it Arthur Blank's decision, or is it the general manager's decision?
Oh, you mean why didn't he go after Lamar Jackson? That was Arthur Blank.
Go get it? Well, there are several quarterbacks available.
Yeah, because it's on Baker Mayfield. Yeah. Right.
No, he's doing all right, Tampa.
That was above Arthur Smith's pay grade, which is fascinating because of his family, though.
You would think
that'd be above his pay grade.
He could afford a lot.
Why not get Lamar Jackson? Yeah. I'll kick in to get Lamar Jackson, right? If you're Arthur Smith, my family would kick in. We have FedEx all over this place.
Go ahead and deliver that one.
Yeah, but there's a good one right there. They're stuck with Ritter and Heinicke. So, I mean, Ritter is not developing, obviously, to what they need him to develop to.
Yeah, which I don't know what they saw last year that led them to believe that he could develop it. But hey, you know what? We all see different things. Speaking of overseas, we have a really fun one. Jacksonville against the Buffalo Bills. And this is interesting because the Jaguars stayed in London. They played a game there last week. Now they get to get this week. Do we see that as an advantage, as like almost like a makeshift home field advantage, not having to deal with the body clock change? Buffalo coming off the big win against Miami last week, now heading over there as a 5.5-point favorite.
Meanwhile, did you know that they had to vacate their hotel because Buffalo's staying in the hotel they stayed in last week? So they
got kicked out?
Yeah, they had to switch hotels after the game. They were talking about it on the broadcast. Oh, wow. That's the only reason I know. I think if this game gets to six, I'll use Buffalo in a teaser. And I like to play against teams off big wins, and obviously that was a big win for Buffalo. But, you know, I don't know that Jacksonville showed me that much in that game. And I got up early and watched every snap of it. I don't know if their defense had to do much against Atlanta, right? It's a totally different animal now coming in here with Buffalo. I'd be very surprised if Jacksonville wins this game. So I'm not going to lay 5.5, but if it gets to six, I'll put it in a 6-point teaser.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a smart bet in terms of this game. Jacksonville, though, and Randy Mueller, who was on the program earlier, talked about this. Just the fact that I know they changed hotels, but they've been there.
Yeah.
And Buffalo, this is new. This is the first time they played.
I believe it's the
overseas
first,
and
at least first in a long time.
Yeah. And with these guys, right? And so that does play a factor. I believe what Randy was talking about is to be true. Any slow start gives belief and confidence to Jacksonville, who's still a young team. They haven't executed the way that they want to yet this year. But this matchup, the history of it suggests that it could go either way, though.
Did you have to play an overseas game?
Only in preseason.
Yeah.
We played in Barcelona. We played the Raiders. And that was a vacation. was a vacation.
By Purchase Tone, I'm sure he has some fantastic stories from Barcelona. Oh, yeah. Maybe we'll tell those off the air. We got about a minute left here. Anything for you guys in this Bengals-Cardinals game? It's fascinated me. Cincinnati's down to a 3-point favorite. This time last week, they were 8-point favorites in this game. Big adjustment. We know Cardinals have played much better through the first month of the season. What can you do here in Bengals-Cardinals?
Did you watch that game in Tennessee? It was
unfortunately,
I couldn't take my eyes off of it.
Unfortunately, I watched.
I couldn't believe what I was watching. They could do nothing against a Tennessee that has no secondary, but he's so limited right now, and they can't run the ball. There you go with the offensive line.
Right.
We didn't build an offensive line.
Is the wrong team favored?
Not wrong team favored, okay, but it's real tempting. It's real tempting to take three here.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
All right,
yeah.
I just wanted to gauge.
You can't make Arizona favorite. Yeah. I don't think at this point yet.
It looks like rock bottom for Cincinnati, to be quite honest. Like, this looks like it is. And maybe they lose the game and that'll be rock bottom. But yeah, I think that's a fascinating line. That 2.5, I might talk myself into a small bet with Cincinnati, I think. But at 3, I think I'll just pass the game and see what happens. But that does it for us here on the Lombardi Line. Coming up on the DraftKings Network is Pablo Torre here at VSiN. Betting analysis continues with Sharp Money. For our producer, Elliot Bowman, for Mike Palm, for Mike Pritchard, I'm Femi Benfei, and the entire crew behind the glass. We wish you all the best of luck here from the Sports Betting Network.